In 2026, 3CR is celebrating 50 years on air.
Coming up is a podcast brought to you by the dedicated and diverse volunteers at 3CR. Just a quick message before you get there. For the month of June, we're asking listeners to donate to the station to help keep us going. We rely on the generous donations of the community to survive. Go to 3cr.org.au/donate and show your support for community-owned and community-run media. Thanks for your support and happy listening.
It is 11:36 a.m. this morning on Sunday morning, which means that you will be listening to Out of the Blue. My name is Tessa Campisi. As always, my voice is beaming to you from the unceded lands and waters of the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people. This always was and always will be Aboriginal land. Thanks to Earth Matters for keeping the airwaves nice and warm for us. On today's show, we'll be talking about fish on drugs. But for science, we'll be back after this announcement.
If you're a renter with problems such as repairs, getting your bond back, negotiating a rent hike, or facing eviction, it helps to know your rights. For free information and advice on renting, you can visit Tenants Victoria at www.tenants.vic.org.au, Anika Legal at www.anikalegal.com, or contact your nearest community legal centre. The government is planning to demolish and redevelop high-rise public housing towers in Melbourne. If you're living in a public housing tower and need free legal advice about your options, find your nearest community legal centre at www.fclc.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
You're listening to Out of the Blue on 3CR Community Radio, the show about our coasts and oceans. And on Out of the Blue, we often speak about the various different kinds of threats that face our aquatic life, whether it's heat waves, low oxygen levels, or oil spills. And often our attention is drawn to dramatic events such as fish kills, such as have been seen in Tasmania's salmon farms, in the Murray-Darling River, and in the South Australian algal bloom. But even subtle shifts in conditions can have significant ramifications for marine life. On today's show, we're going to hear from a scientist who was investigating how pharmaceutical compounds in our waterways are impacting fish cognition, and in turn how this might impact fish populations. Here's Jack.
My name's Jack Manera. I'm a PhD student at Monash University. I'm studying behavioural ecology and ecotoxicology, so I'm looking at how essentially, chemical pollutants from humans are disrupting the behaviour of natural wildlife. Originally, I'm from southwest Western Australia, from sort of farming background. So I'm a long way from home, but yeah, no, really enjoying it over here in Melbourne.
So we're going to be looking at fish cognition, what's kind of going on inside those fishy little brains. When did you first become interested in this subject?
That's a great question. So, I mean, growing up, I was surfing a lot and a lot of snorkeling. And I remember having a strong affinity for blue grouper. It was a sort of resident blue grouper in the bay in like the coastal town where I grew up. And that really sparked my interest in sort of the life underwater. That went on the back burner for a long time. I always was very passionate about nature and wildlife. But then sort of later in my undergraduate research, I bumped into who is now my supervisor, Professor Bob Wong, and he inspired me again and sort of was showing me all these really cool experiments happening with fish. And yeah, it really, really sparked my interest. And then I thought, you know what, this is really cool. Then I wanted to dive on in and figure out, what fish are thinking and how they're sort of managing in these uncertain times where there's so much human disturbance.
Mm. So what are fish thinking? What do they think about?
It's hard. I mean, it's really hard for us experimentally to understand what fish are thinking because it's hard not to anthropomorphize their thoughts. Mm. And they've got completely different sensory systems to what we have and they're in tune with things that we can't even perceive. So it's really hard to know what they're thinking exactly. But definitely with the fish that I work with, the females seem to be... They probably have quite complex thoughts. They've got these really cool social structures. and they have these really interesting behaviours with one another. The males seem to only care about sex. Which
typical.
Is, yeah, yeah, exactly.
You were saying outside of the studio that some people don't believe that fish have thoughts. Some people don't believe that fish are animals even.
Yeah.
Where do you fall on this line?
So there's like a bit of a historical problem where, well, I call it a problem. I guess other people might not think it's a problem, but this sort of history of people believing that fish traditionally aren't animals. As I was saying, some states in Australia still don't believe fish are animals and say still don't require ethics to work on. I certainly believe that they are animals and require ethics permits. But going further than that, traditionally people sort of always have had this hierarchy to nature where sort of humans are at the top and we sort of work our way down with this hierarchy of how we rank the sort of cognitive capacity of different species. And fish always fell quite low on that ladder. You see this in things like the classic sayings of memory like a goldfish and stuff like that. I personally think fish are incredibly intelligent. Half the time they're outperforming myself and my colleagues and we're all PhDs, so that says something. They're incredibly smart, and it's just they're smart in different ways. I mean, their lifestyle and what's required of them in the environment is completely different to what's required of us.
So consider me convinced. I believe that fish also can think, but they don't just think about things, they think about place. And so part of your research is looking at spatial cognition. Why is understanding space important for a fish survival?
For sure. So spatial cognition is one of the more sort of basal cognitive capacities we talk about, and it's really important across most animal species. So you can think about it's important for foraging. So we have things like there's certain bird species like mountain chickadees which store their food they store the food in summer, so then during winter they can go and retrieve that food. So if you're hiding your food in various locations, you need to remember where you've stashed it. So spatial learning is really important there. Or then there's other cases where certain fish species need to be able to remember the layout of their environment. So if they see a predator, they sort of know where the best hiding hole is or where to escape to. And so constantly being able to map your environment and understand where you are in relation to all these different factors is critically important for just about everything to do with survival, including also memorizing where mates are. So you might know, oh, okay, well, there's a shoal of female fish over at the rock over there. So I know when I'm ready for sex, I'm going to shoot over there.
So there's some evidence now that indicates that the same pharmaceutical compounds that affect our brains as humans are affecting aquatic life as well. And your research has been investigating how exposure to pharmaceutical drugs is impacting this fish cognition and then their behaviour. So how do fish come into contact with these compounds in the first place, and where are they most concentrated?
It's a strange one. When I first heard about it, I was very surprised. You sort of typically used to hearing about heavy metals and pesticides, agricultural runoff. Pharmaceuticals are a really interesting one. So after we consume pharmaceuticals, most of the time they're not fully metabolized. So that means our body's not breaking it down. And so we excrete that when we pee. We excrete these biologically active compounds into the wastewater. And then they make their way to wastewater treatment facilities, which traditionally remove like bad pathogens and various different types of pollutants, but they're not really designed to remove pharmaceuticals in particular, because quite often pharmaceuticals can be really small, these really small molecules that can get through a lot of different sort of filtrations and different breaking like processes that would break them down. So what we actually find is we're getting this discharge of human pharmaceuticals into the environment, and these compounds are they're specifically designed to be active in biological systems. Like, we design them to be able to modulate our moods and our thinking. And these sort of systems that they play on in humans are highly conserved across many, many animals. In some cases, some of these systems are even present in plants. So that's just showing you, evolutionary conservation is incredible. And these are really integral systems. And so we find that when these are in the environment, particularly in aquatic ecosystems, so close to discharge of where wastewater treatment plants would discharge the treated wastewater, we're finding that they can be at quite high concentrations. In some cases, in extreme cases, they can be at therapeutic concentrations in natural water bodies. And so we've got fish that are effectively being put on this Yeah, they're effectively being put on a human prescription worth of some sort of pharmaceutical compound.
And it's not even on the PBS.
Exactly.
So can you tell me, let's get into a little bit more detail about your research. What question were you seeking to answer, and how did you go about designing your experiments?
What brought me to my question was sort of this slow progression in this new sort of field. And I say new, it's relatively new, ecotoxicology, or more specifically behavioral ecotoxicology. People were first sort of initially running experiments looking at what concentrations these pharmaceuticals would be at, what concentrations these pharmaceuticals would kill organisms. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of their way of measuring, okay, are we harming the environment or not? As time went by, people started to realize, okay, maybe they're not at concentrations that kill things instantly, but it might have various metabolic effects, or it might have these knock-on effects. And eventually we got to the point where we started recognizing, well, at really low concentrations, they actually still have behavioral effects. And these behavioral effects can also still have negative consequences. So a good example is like EE2, which is like synthetic estrogen that's in the contraceptive pill, that's been shown to reduce sort of courtship behaviours in many male fish. So it reduces reproduction, and in extreme cases they've found that it can cause full population collapse as well.
And you can imagine all the ramifications throughout the marine ecosystem just from these changes in behaviour rather than massive fish kills as such.
Yeah, exactly. So you get, you can have these really insidious sort of effects where differing levels, whether it's the predators, the prey, or competitors, or maybe one sex of the same species, we're getting these really weird behavioural changes which can then alter the whole ecosystem function. So we sort of then moved into this period of sort of looking at all these different behaviours and these important survival behaviours like anti-predator behaviour or mating. But no one to date had really looked at sort of the mechanistic underpinning, looking at cognition itself. Mm. And so a lot of these behaviours are driven by cognitive processes, like the decision or being able to recognize something as a predator and then decide whether or how to act. And so I was really interested in sort of teasing that apart and having a look at some more of these sort of higher cognitive functioning. And so that brought me to this question of, are these pharmaceuticals at the concentrations that they're at in the environment now, are they having an effect on the cognitive performance of fish?
You're listening to 3CR. This is Out of the Blue. On today's show, we're thinking about what fish are thinking about. Jack Manera from Monash University there has been conducting experiments to test how different concentrations of pharmaceutical compounds in our waterways may impact fish cognition.
Essentially, I got these fish called guppies. A lot of people are familiar with them in the aquarium trade. They're actually an invasive species here in Australia. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, but they're from Trinidad and Tobago, so they like warm tropical water. So they're only invasive up in northern Queensland, which is... It's nice for me to be able to head up to northern Queensland for field work, see some of the sun up there, which is lovely, collect some invasive species to remove from the natural environment and then bring them back for sort of repurposing, which is nice.
And did you have to go really remote to get to a river that wasn't impacted by pharmaceuticals?
It was fairly remote, but it's not too far out of Townsville. And Townsville, you could consider Townsville a decent sized city. The importance is that the watershed that they fall in is pristine. So that entire watershed upstream of where we collect them all falls within a national park, and it's very well regulated. I mean, you can still technically say there may be very, very low levels of contamination. If people are swimming upstream and pee in the water, then there's going to be an incredibly low level, but that'll dilute out. So there's effectively no contamination in this stream. And that is a very important consideration because you can obviously have interacting effects with different pharmaceuticals or different pollutants and things like that.
Mm. So you got these fish from this remote river outside of Townsville, brought them back down to Melbourne, and then what happened next?
Yeah, so then we brought them down and we housed them all at Monash University. They all got their own little condos, little studio apartments, which is nice. You got to make sure you have a lot of enrichment. This is something really important. A lot of studies have shown that when fish are sort of housed in an empty tank, it affects their cognitive capacity, which I'm sure would be the same with a human if you put them in an empty room. So we made up these really nice little tanks for them. They all got their own tanks, but were able to interact with each other through sort of the glass interface. So we housed them, we exposed them to pharmaceuticals, various different concentrations that we find in the environment. We were specifically looking at an antidepressant called amitriptyline. And this is a, it's not prescribed as frequently anymore. It is still prescribed. It's a bit more of a last line backup drug because it's, I think a lot of practitioners refer to it as a sledgehammer. So it's fairly, it's pretty broad acting. So it's not a super selective drug. It does, it affects quite a few different neurochemical systems in your brain. And so it's, if other drugs aren't working, it's sort of a surefire way to make sure you get some sort of effect. But consequently, it's also terrible when it's a pollutant as well. So we exposed them for about 10 days to these this realistic concentration. And then I moved them across into these mazes. and it's, I guess, the best way to describe the maze, if people can imagine this, it would be if you're presented, if you're in a room and you're presented with two doors, a door on the left and a door on the right, and you go through one of the doors, and then once you go through the door, you either find out that's a dead end or it presents you with another two doors. And so then if it's not the dead end and you do have another selection of two doors, you then select which door again, and behind one of those two doors, there'll be a reward. And so it's essentially them trying to memorize, is it the left door, then the right door? Is it the left door, right door, right door? So it's not super complicated. It's only this sort of two decision process. But the key is that they don't know, you can't see the correct route through. So they have to commit to a decision, and it's not until after they've made the decision that they then find out whether they've made the correct or incorrect decision. And so putting them in this maze, then I can, I was able to repeatedly assay them so we can then let them try and solve the maze.
It was a lot
of
maze solving. Wasn't it like three times a day for 4 days in a row?
It's a lot of maze solving.
It's a lot of puzzles for a little fish.
It is, it is.
So yeah, tell me about how the maze solving abilities changed over time. And there was also like a sex dimension to this, wasn't there?
Yeah. And that's probably the was the biggest sort of finding we got out of this. So all fish across the board showed learning, which was really cool. So the male and female guppies were all improving in how fast they solved the maze and how accurately they solved the maze. And when I say accurately, that's sort of looking at how many incorrect decisions they made before making it to like the final correct decision. And so we found, yeah, across the board, they were all learning, and they were all learning even when they were exposed to pharmaceuticals under control conditions. So just natural populations, we found the males slightly outperformed the females. They had a slightly higher accuracy, which was really interesting. That's something that's been mirrored across a few species, sort of fill different ecological niches in the natural environment. Females tend to sort of shoal together and form these nice social groups. Males tend to do a lot more solitary navigation and sort of traversing these really large complex environments, going up and downstream, looking for females. And so we think this is sort of an experience-driven difference where these males are just used to having to navigate by themselves large distances and very complex environments. But then we found when they're exposed to sort of low concentrations that sit close to the mean concentration we find this drug at in the environment, we found that the males were affected. So they ended up making more mistakes and they ended up being more comparable to the females. The females were unaffected though, which was really interesting. But then under the high concentrations, sort of sitting up in the maximal measurements we see these the drugs out in the environment, the males were actually performing significantly worse than the females. And the females again were unaffected. So it was really cool to see that these females are robust to their pharmaceutical exposure, but the males seem to be really susceptible.
So back out of the lab, take the fishes out of the mazes and back into the waterways. Fish don't often spend that much time completing mazes, as far as I know. So what are the broader implications of your experimental findings for fish populations?
Yeah, the maze, I guess, is a bit of a, it's an abstract sort of way of looking at this. It definitely, it ties back to the things we were talking about earlier with spatial cognition being a very important facet of cognition for memorizing the location of mates, memorizing the location of foraging patches, how to escape predators, etc. And so we think that if these pharmaceuticals are detrimenting the cognitive capacity of these fish or their ability to sort of map and solve these mazes, that's going to translate across to similar effects in the environment where we're going to see maybe the male's spatial learning or spatial memory is not going to be as good as it should be. And particularly considering that we saw that they had better social learning in the control conditions, this may indicate that potentially in the wild that this is a bit more selected for. It's an important trait for them to have to be really good at spatial learning. And so if these pharmaceuticals are having this effect, this could definitely knock on and affect the populations. And particularly with the sex-specific effects, the fact that males are affected and not females, it could cause sort of these skews in sex ratios in wild populations, which then has big consequences for the population as well.
So these are kind of the initial studies that we're kind of getting a feel for how these drugs are impacting fish. Are there any interventions that have been found so far that can reduce the dispersal of these pharmaceutical compounds into our waterways?
Yeah, that's one we get asked a lot. By no means are we recommending that people don't listen to health practitioners. People should still take pharmaceuticals that they need to take. The biggest solution that we can do as general consumers is make sure that we're disposing of expired pharmaceuticals correctly. So don't flush them down the toilet, don't wash them down the sink, because that's obviously incredibly high concentrations of active pharmaceutical. Which, as I was saying, the wastewater treatment plants don't adequately remove. So the best thing is if you can hand your expired pharmaceuticals into chemists or in hospitals or various collection sites, then at least they'll be disposed of correctly and deactivated. At different levels of government and even health practitioner levels, there's different interventions that can come in. But yeah, for us as the just daily consumer, making sure we don't throw out any pharmaceuticals incorrectly.
Yeah, I really hope that we as humans have the cognitive abilities to make these changes. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Jack.
No, cheers. Thank you so much.
That was Jack Manera, a PhD candidate from Monash University. And I really loved reading about his research. I found it so interesting. If you're interested in reading up on his research as well, you can find a link to his website in the show notes, which is at 3cr.org.au/radioblue. And whilst you're on the website, you can donate to Out of the Blue for Radiothon. We're still fundraising. Every donation over $2 in the month of June is tax deductible. So if you have cash to spare, keep 3CR going for another 50 years. And that's it for Out of the Blue today. Until next time, stay salty, friends.
CR celebrating 50 years.
Did you enjoy listening to that podcast? 3CR is a community radio station, and you, the listener, are a part of that community. Right now, it's our radiothon. We need you to pitch in with a few dollars to keep the station going. We can't do it without you. It's easy. Head to 3cr.org.au/donate. Your donations really matter.